Hi, I'm Margaret Preston, president of Power Over Parkinson's. And today, in conjunction with our Pat Profile series, we have Dr. Erin Prasant. She's a board certified neurologist as well as a certified culinary medicine specialist. So, Dr. Prasant, thank you so much for being with us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, well, we're going to jump right in and talk a little bit about your title and what culinary medicine means. So let's start with defining the term culinary medicine and sharing with our listeners what culinary medicine is and really the premise around the concept of being of food really being medicine.
Yeah, it's a great question. We hear that all the time right now, right? Food is medicine, and you may have your own concept of what it means. So starting with what culinary medicine is, because a lot of people definitely don't know what that is. So it's really a field of medicine that's not fully nutrition, not fully medicine, and not like, you know, food, the culinary arts, right? It's kind of a combination of all that. Like if you had a Venn diagram, it'd be like that middle
yeah.
section. And it's really aimed at helping people reach, you know, really good decisions about their food and how to access food given their situations that help prevent and treat their own diseases. And then there's a whole how-to portion of culinary medicine, which is one of my favorites, which has to do with showing people how to actually do this. So there's the whole concept behind it and talking about it. And then there's the, let's get into the kitchen and like get real about this. And what can you really do? And how can you make this happen for yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. I love the Venn diagram visual. I think that's helpful, showing like really the marriage between those two disciplines.
Yeah.
Well, for years, if we can talk about eating healthy, that terminology that we all hear, irrespective of Parkinson's, we hear eating healthy, eating healthy. I think for many of us, we think we know what that means because it is an overused term, and we have such a fad diet culture that we kind of think we know it. But I'd like to get back to really the basics and redefining what eating healthy means for our Parkinson's community. So what does eating healthy look like for those people with Parkinson's, and what are some of the things they really should incorporate on their plates?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Like we all have this concept again of like what eating healthy is, and it is going to be different for a little bit different for everybody. But getting back to the basics, like you said, is definitely the way to go. You know, there are all these fads out there. Like, should I be keto? Should I be paleo? Should I be gluten-free or whatever? And there may be certain health conditions that require you to be one of those things. But in general, for the general population, you know, these fad diets are difficult to maintain and could bring on other health problems. You know, like keto can create other health problems in your body. So really getting back to those basics. So what are the basics, right? Eating whole fruits, eating whole vegetables, whole grains, more just fresh food rather than what we've kind of moved to in our society, which is a lot of like processed, boxed, kind of quick fix kinds of food. Because you could be on like a keto diet or a paleo diet or a gluten-free diet, for instance, and eat just completely processed foods,
right?
And it may not be any better for your body. So it's really important to get back to those. Let's just get back to like putting the food on the plate. If it looks like food, that's what you want on your plate.
Yeah. And it's really like the food that's come from out of the earth, right? So those things we're literally pulling off a vine, are those are the things you want on your plate because they haven't been processed.
That's right. Right. So minimally processed, colorful. I mean, you just want your plate to look appealing, and it doesn't have to look appealing to whoever's on Instagram or Pinterest,
right?
Just to yourself, but
absolutely,
you know, colorful and fresh, in you know, within your limitations, right? Everybody has their own limitations. So
you did touch on some of the diets we hear about now. So the gluten-free, the keto. So share more about these two diets and really their efficacy for those dealing with Parkinson's disease.
Yeah, it's a good question. So keto, there was one small study a number of years back that suggested that maybe it would help with non-motor symptoms. But again, it was very, very small, and I haven't seen any follow-up for that. And that being said, keto is a really hard diet to follow, like to really stay on a keto diet. It's difficult. So, you know, if you don't have another medical reason to be on it, just like trying to add that in with all your other Parkinson's things going on will make your life very difficult and likely make you feel like you're going to like you just can't keep up with it, like you fail, you know, and we don't need anything else in our lives like telling us like, oh, yeah, you're failing with this.
Absolutely.
So there's no great evidence for keto and Parkinson's disease that I would recommend.
Okay.
The gluten-free diet, obviously there are people who have a medical need to be gluten-free. You know, if you have celiac disease, then you 100% have to do that. From a Parkinson's solely standpoint, again, there are no studies to support that being gluten-free is better for Parkinson's disease. Maybe we'll see that down the road. But again, you know, one of my issues with these diets tends to be that people go towards processed foods. You know, gluten-free is, again, a difficult one to stay on. And so you reach for the gluten-free boxed processed foods in order to get your nutrients. And all the evidence in medicine is pointing towards ultra-processed foods and processed foods being worse for your body, yeah, for your brain health, for everything.
Yeah.
So the more we can stay away from that stuff, the better.
Absolutely. That makes sense. So if we can get really specific with those with Parkinson's and talk about medication, mealtime, and all that good stuff, of course, there's so much talk around when to take your medication for, after 30 minutes, an hour, et cetera. So help us dispel the myths around this one and really whether patients should eat when they take their medicine, or whether they should have that 30-minute, 16-minute spacing between meals and medicine. And also, yeah, as a part two, this question, can you just clarify kind of the impact of protein and medication absorption for those with Parkinson's?
Yeah, so those kind of go hand in hand. Right. So the main medication that people talk about there being an issue with food is the carbidopa-levodopa or Sinemet or whatever form of this medication you might take, which most people with Parkinson's are taking in some form or will end up on, right? Mm-hmm. So the issue with the protein and that medication is that they bind to the same receptor in the gut. So if you fill that receptor up with a bunch of protein, right, let's say like, you know, a couple of scrambled eggs and then they take my medication, you may not absorb it quite as well. Mm-hmm. So you may notice that your symptoms don't improve like they usually do. This happens to be a pretty like person specific response. So I don't think, again, there's not like one prescriptive way to tell people to do this. Mm-hmm. You know, I have had some patients in the past that it doesn't matter. Like they can take their medications with their eggs, mm-hmm, and other people who say, if I eat like peanut butter within an hour of my medication, I can't move, you know. Okay. So it is very patient dependent, and you, mm-hmm, kind of have to feel that out for yourself, mm-hmm, and maybe work with your doctor on that. In general, if there is an interaction, kind of taking the medication then waiting a bit of time, 30 to 60 minutes, usually will help.
Okay.
And that can get a little complicated, I know, when people are taking medication so frequently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And other people say, well, but I need to eat with my medication or I feel nauseated.
Right.
So if you do need to eat with your medication, eating something like a piece of toast, you know, like if, let's say it's your morning dose, you can't just get up and take your medication without feeling sick. So have a piece of toast. Don't, you know, avoid putting like peanut butter on it. You can put some jam, have that, take your medication, and then, you know, have the rest of your meal in a little bit. So it is pretty patient dependent, but that protein interaction is the main interaction that people talk about. And it is pretty much only with that carbidopa-levodopa medication, not all these other medications that you may be on.
Okay. So kind of assess the impact it has on you, whether it's nothing, great. If it is something, maybe it's a conversation you have with your neurologist to kind of, you know, wade through the timing and when to consume that protein, kind of a little bit separated from medication.
Right.
Okay. Again, another specific question of Parkinson's disease, of course, and those who have swallowing issues. I'd like to talk about, you know, eating around, and kind of battling that symptom, if you will, of Parkinson's. What can be done to mitigate these issues while also ensuring proper nutrition? Because I think, you know, some folks with swallowing issues may not want to eat as much. And then of course we have other problems associated with not eating as much and getting the nutrients. So talk with us a little bit about how to mitigate that issue.
Yeah, so swallowing can be a big issue. I mean, the first and foremost, get a formal swallowing evaluation, because without that, really nobody can tell you what is actually going on with your swallowing.
Right.
You may feel like your swallowing is fine, and then you may get a swallow evaluation and they may say, actually, you know, you should be practicing these techniques when you eat.
Okay.
Or they may say, you know what, it's not as bad as you think. So, you know, just assuming like, oh, I have to be on a pureed diet or an all liquid diet,
right,
not what you should do, because one, it takes away food that maybe you could eat, and
right,
you don't have the actual data to support that.
Yeah.
So if you are concerned about that at all, definitely talk to your doctor, get an order for a formal swallow evaluation, and just see where you're sitting. The, you know, speech therapists have a lot of ways to help with swallowing that doesn't mean, again, that you have to be on a puree diet or a liquid diet. And I think sometimes if people just get those techniques, they do feel a little safer eating. Like you said,
yeah,
you know, that they won't like restrict, like, I can't eat anything.
Right.
And certainly don't want that happening because of the weight loss and the other issues that go along with not eating enough. If you do have a lot of swallowing problems, and let's say you do need to be on a softer food diet, it doesn't have to be all kind of like those bottled drinks that are kind of disgusting and sugary. You know, there's a lot of food options out there. And this is where kind of like the creativity comes in, you know, smoothies and soups and, you know, some casseroles and things like that. So you can make it happen. You can eat the foods you want or a lot of the foods you want and get enough nutrients. It's just a matter of really finding out how you're swallowing, what is your swallowing capability, what are your swallowing capabilities, and like then going from there in terms of how to make your food to fit that.
Absolutely. That makes sense. And I think that the best takeaway I heard you say was really, it doesn't have to always be like the shakes and like pure liquid. Like you have some wiggle room potentially with casseroles and soups, and it's just a matter of potentially connecting with a nutritionalist to help, you know, kind of stimulate that creativity and how to consume softer foods.
Yes, absolutely. Bringing in other resources in order to kind of get this creativity going so that you're not so kind of bored with just a liquid shake.
Right. Absolutely. Well, many people with Parkinson's, as we know, have the delayed gastric emptying. So we think about that in conjunction with constipation or constipation alone. So with that being said, how do folks really combat these symptoms so they're able to get their meals in and kind of mitigate that those feelings of I'm not hungry, because you do have that constipation or delayed gastric emptying. So what do we do about these two issues?
Yeah, so they definitely can keep people from wanting to eat, but eating kind of those smaller meals throughout the day would be the way to go in this situation. I think once people kind of get on that routine, it's a little easier for them to go ahead and do. And of course, there are going to be foods that probably taste better or sit better. And, you know, that's going to be a little bit patient specific too. So it depends on what you were used to eating and what you like, but you can still incorporate those foods that you enjoy, just maybe a little bit smaller meals, a little bit more snacking. And those snacks and smaller meals can certainly be very nutrient dense. Mm-hmm. And that's what I like to really impart on people is that, you know, it doesn't have to be like a, you know, we often again turn to the processed foods when we're looking for like those snacky things.
Yeah.
But with just a tad bit of planning ahead of time, you can have this stuff in your fridge and then be able to pull it out without like having to do any further prep. And
right,
it can be really nutrient dense, have a lot of calories so that you're not losing weight, but good calories, you know, not like Dorito calories.
Yeah. Not all calories are equal.
Exactly.
So,
and I don't like putting like, you know, bad food and good food.
Right.
You know, but in general, we want to be eating, you know, like what are high calorie foods that are healthy, like nuts and nut butters, beans, like whole grains, those types of things. And you can easily prep those ahead of time. They can be in your fridge and you can just pull them out.
Yeah. And I suspect with the kind of more frequent, smaller meals, you'll obviously, in theory, not have that feeling, that extended feeling of full as long, and then be wanting to eat maybe in 3 hours or a couple hours.
Right. And that's the goal, right? To, you know, actually none of us really want to have that like bloated, overly, you know, post Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Like, no, none of us enjoy that.
Yeah. it's really not good for any of us.
Right.
But definitely with that delayed gastric emptying or a lot of constipation, you're going to need to just pay attention. And eating slowly, eating with other people is another way to kind of mitigate that, because we don't tend to like chow on our food so much if we're taking our time with our meals and we're enjoying them. Mm-hmm. We're talking to other people. Then we sit a little bit and we notice, oh yeah, I am a little bit full.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll stop with before
yeah.
we get that overly bloated phase.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So as a follow-up to my last question, and particularly around constipation, since it is such a common issue with those with Parkinson's disease, what are the right foods to be eating when dealing with constipation?
Yeah. Yeah. So fortunately, all the kind of food nutrition research and Parkinson's has supported kind of this Mediterranean type of diet, which mm-hmm. incorporates whole fruits and vegetables, whole grains, less dairy, mm-hmm. less meat, all of these heavy, heavy foods. And those are actually the foods that will help with constipation too, mm-hmm. you know, high fiber foods. So when you choose an apple, don't peel it first, you know, eat it with the skin on, whether you cut it mm-hmm. or not. Or if you're putting these things into a smoothie, let's say, put the fruit in there with the skin on, don't strain it, get all that extra pulp. You want that stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. And then of course, incorporating, the fiber through vegetables, like non-starchy vegetables. So like potatoes are a very starchy vegetable, you know, but you want to eat like cruciferous vegetables. In Parkinson's, berries have been shown to be helpful because of all their antioxidant properties for your brain, but it will also help your gut as well. So okay. with that constipation. And of course, water, you know, hydration is super important. Our gut will not move if we don't have enough hydration. And I know that that is a place people struggle.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're not that person that can sit down and drink like 3-5 glasses of water, you know, mm-hmm. maybe like you like sparkling water, could you put a little bit of like lemon in there to make it more appealing? You know, we sure. do want to be drinking things that are not sugary. Tea and coffee have been shown to be very helpful for our brains. Mm-hmm. So of course you can drink those as well. Maybe, you know, obviously in the afternoon, not being drinking a lot of caffeine,
right.
For sleep issues, which is a whole nother problem, but definitely hydration. And then of course the third component of constipation would be movement. Mm-hmm. You know, the more sedentary we are, the less our gut moves too. So mm-hmm. everybody's at a different level of being able to move, and that is fine. But you know, just some sort of movement. So if you can, you know, get out to your mailbox and that's what you can do, then definitely do that. If you can walk around your kitchen or mm-hmm. your house, do that. If you can go on a, you know, 2-mile walk, do that. Whatever your level might be, or if you're going to Parkinson's boxing classes, that's great too, you know, but definitely the movement portion is super important. So when you're kind of combining all three of these issues, mm-hmm. it will help. You know, and of course, if you're really, really struggling and uncomfortable, you know, maybe seeing a GI specialist can be something to consider as well.
Okay. So you touched on the Mediterranean diet. I wanted to hear a little bit more about that. Because we have read where it is kind of a staple potentially for those with Parkinson's disease, and also the MIND diet. So share with our listeners a little bit more about the MIND diet, as Mediterranean MIND really seemed or really the gold standard for those with Parkinson's.
Yeah. So in pretty much all the literature, the Mediterranean diet has been the most studied type of diet, even for like cardiovascular conditions and mm-hmm. things like that. So we do have like decent data on it. What is the Mediterranean diet? It's really this concept. I like to describe it more as a way of eating, because I kind of like hate that diet word, but mm-hmm. Because it implies something that we do and then we stop, right? When we think about a diet, it's like, mm-hmm. oh, I'm going on a diet. But this is kind of more of a way of eating. So, you know, it really is, the base of it is really those whole fruits and vegetables, then whole grains, there's seafood, and kind of as we go up this pyramid, right, we get less and less dairy, less and less meat, less and less like sweets, right? And that's kind of the way we want to be thinking about what we're eating. Mm-hmm. The MIND diet is very similar. It's a little bit more restrictive in terms of you know, like things like butter, it like specifically calls out butter, using olive oil instead of butter. It talks, the main fruit it talks about on the Mind Diet is berries. Again, they're very, very high in these antioxidants, which are great for our brains. And then limiting pastries, sweets, things like that on the Mind Diet too. But they do have a lot of overlap. So both of these diets have been shown to be helpful in Parkinson's disease. There have been some studies that, you know, correlate. Nothing is one-to-one in nutritional studies. So it's not like, well, if I eat enough broccoli, I won't get Parkinson's. I mean, we just don't, like, we just can never have that kind of, like, correlation.
Right.
Way of finding that kind of data in nutritional literature. So, you know, there have been studies that have shown slower rates of progression with people who adhere to one of these types of diets very closely, or maybe even slower onset of disease in people who adhere to these types of diets. So
while you can't correlate a specific food or diet to not getting Parkinson's, you can correlate some of the neuroprotective properties of some of the food and its impact on disease progression and onset. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. And so they're all correlations again. And you can't, you know, this is not a way to blame yourself either. This is not a way to be like, oh my gosh, I ate this kind of diet and now I have Parkinson's. That's not what this is either, right?
Yeah.
You know, Parkinson's is like a multifactorial issue and you're not to blame for it at all. But, you know, in terms of helping yourself feel better, once you do have Parkinson's, there is some evidence to show these diets can help with that.
Yeah, which is a little bit exciting, I hope, for our listeners, because we think, you know, the medication, of course, is important, has a big role in therapeutics, but it's exciting to hear there are some other ways to help mitigate the disease, in addition to exercise, of course, but through eating and through the neuroprotective properties and antioxidants and all the good things we can find in food that we get outside.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons I love this part. Even though, you know, I can't be like, oh, these berries will cure your Parkinson's.
Right.
I think it gives people hope. And I think that's a huge part of what we need in Parkinson's and the movement disorders world is kind of this hope, you know, just like exercise. It gives you hope and it makes you feel better along the way. Like we still have this big, you know, you're still here. We still have to feel good, get up every day.
Yeah.
And the better we can feel every day, the better you will do, you know, we know
that. And the so better many things about the disease that folks can't control, and they can control when they exercise and what they eat. So I think it's just another controllable. So that to me, it's exciting.
Yeah, it's exciting and I think empowering. I like that, you know, you were talking about that, like instead of putting this on you as like, oh my gosh, you have another thing to do. It's like, this is a way you can take hold and empower yourself to feel better.
Yeah, I totally agree. Talking about another kind of specific symptom of Parkinson's related to food apathy. So what are your recommendations for those who do experience food apathy? This, of course, could be due to the deterioration of taste, smell, those senses, or just general apathy about the things that they used to enjoy that no longer excite them. So how do folks really combat those feelings, because they are feelings, to ensure they're getting the nutrients they need to live well with Parkinson's?
Yeah. Apathy is such a difficult symptom, right? And it comes from a lot of reasons, like you were saying, lack of smell, lack of taste. But in general, apathy is pretty common in Parkinson's, just general apathy. So, you know, to combat that, obviously be talking to your doctor. There are some like medications that you might be able to be on that could help. But in terms of around your food, you know, really finding the times of the day or the days where you're feeling good or better or have a little bit more energy or a little bit more motivation, taking those times to maybe prep some food, like in big batches. Like if you want to be able to have soup or something this week or some sort of casserole, take the time at that point to make it and then put it in your fridge or freeze it and have these things there so that when 4 or 5 o'clock rolls around and it's dinner time and you're hungry and you just think, I can't do anything more. Like I'm just done. You know, you have something there that you could just literally pop out of the freezer and put in a microwave. It's so much better for you than, again, sitting down with that bag of chips or whatever you can eat.
That's easy. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's, you know, and I know there's times where you're fatigued, it's apathy, it's like my medications aren't working, so the motor symptoms are difficult. So really finding those times where you are feeling good. Involving other people in the prep is important too. You know, if you live with other people or you have other people that visit you or, you know, friends or grandkids or whatever that come over, involve them in the prep too. You know, we'll put those grandkids to work.
Yeah.
In the kitchen, they can do it, you know, and make it a little bit more fun rather than something that's more tedious.
Yeah.
If you have the swallow or the like lack of smell and taste, that can be a problem because then you just don't want to eat what you used to. Kind of playing with textures can help. So some like nuts or something crunchy on top, and you know, playing with those textures is really helpful. Maybe try some new spices. You know, if you've never tried, I don't know, just, I don't know, pick something you've never tried, try it. You might be able to smell or taste it a little bit better, and that might be nice to you. Using fresh herbs can also be helpful. You might be able to taste those or smell those a little bit more. And you know, if you are suffering from low blood pressure from Parkinson's, kind of that lightheadedness, you know, you don't have to be so worried about avoiding salt. So you can use a little bit more, which can kind of be helpful too. So kind of just playing around with those things, look at it as a way to get more creative in the kitchen, a way to try new things maybe, and you might be surprised at what you find.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that. Well, what do you recommend for those who have lost muscle mass and have actually lost weight due to Parkinson's? How do we safely put on all calories aren't the same, as we noted earlier in our discussion. So how do we safely put on the right calories, and pounds really back on, to those who may have lost muscle mass and, just weight with Parkinson's disease?
Yeah. Well, staying active is definitely a great, you know, you definitely need to do that, even though that seems counterintuitive, like you're going to lose weight, but it is important to keep, you know, your muscles strong by being active. If you are losing weight, again, it's those nutrient dense calories that you really want to be consuming. So the high calorie foods that are healthy, the nuts, the nut butters, there's something called tahini. If people aren't familiar with it, it's like a sesame seed paste. It's kind of nutty texture, and you can do a lot with it. There are a lot of dressings you can make that are pretty simple, like tahini and olive oil and lemon. You know, using high quality oils like olive oil rather than butter to cook with. These are all good ways to kind of increase those calories, but in a really, really healthy way. Making sure that you are eating your whole grains. Beans are high in protein, you know, you're going to have more calories than something like beans, but they can be also really cheap food. You know, you can use canned or dried. It doesn't matter. You can make them ahead of time.
Yeah. So
I love, you know, the beans, lentils, those types of things. So just making sure that you're cooking with high quality ingredients and not food restricting, and really paying attention to getting those nutrient dense calories in.
Okay. So if you can take a few minutes to share your thoughts about supplements and when to introduce various supplements. You know, I think we also have a saturated market in this area. So when do we introduce a supplement to one's diet?
So in general, there's like no, I have not seen a study yet that suggests taking a supplement will help with your Parkinson's disease. Supplements are unregulated too, so we have to be a bit careful. You know, I've seen some pretty like astounding studies about what a bottle says it has in it and what it actually has in it. So you do want to be a bit careful about what you're taking and putting into your body. In terms of probiotics, which is one of the common questions, you know, unless you've really seen a GI specialist and they've told you need to be on these, there's not any evidence for taking probiotics yet that I've seen that's compelling enough to say, hey, you need to go out and get these.
Okay.
Prebiotics is the other area, and you get prebiotics from your food. So if you're eating, so what a prebiotic is like that fiber that you get from food that the good bacteria in your gut feed on. So your gut's happy if you get prebiotics because that bacteria in there is like great, you know, so happy. So where can you get this fiber? You get it from whole fruits and vegetables, from eating the skins on fruits, from eating a variety of vegetables. And again, they don't have to be, when I say whole vegetables, you can eat frozen vegetables too. Make sure they're not like covered in a butter sauce or something.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But if that's what you can get, then eat those too. So the prebiotics are better when they come from your food anyway. And in general, like all across medicine, pretty much the studies have shown our bodies do better if we're getting these nutrients from our foods rather than from a pill. There may be certain circumstances where you have to take a pill and that's fine, but without a doctor specifically telling you, you need to be on this, I wouldn't go out and spend a bunch of money on supplements.
Sure. It almost took our conversation full circle because we're back to food as medicine. Instead of taking a pill or a supplement, it's best just to get it through the appropriate food and the nutrients in the food. So
yeah.
That's great. As we conclude our chat, I'd love for you to share your recommendations for people with Parkinson's to seek nutritional assistance. Where do they go? How do they find reliable resources who are available to them as they kind of navigate the world of nutrition?
Yeah. Yeah, it is kind of a difficult world. And if you go into your neurologist, likely you'll just get a pretty like flat answer and they won't have a lot of things to say about it. You can request to see a dietitian. I know, I don't know about insurance coverage. In this country, we have a weird thing about that. So you may have to pay out of pocket for one visit, a nutritionist. There are some resources out there. You know, I co-authored a brain health guide with the Michael J. Fox Foundation with Dr. Dolhoun there, and that's free online. You can read that. It's pretty comprehensive. A lot of what we talked about here, but does a little bit more of a deep dive on like what the different diets are and kind of how to do this. There's also a video that goes along with that where we talk about like how you might more the culinary medicine aspect of things. And, you know, also, I think that the thing to remember is to kind of start slow. Don't put a lot of pressure on yourself to overhaul your diet all at once.
Yeah.
So you heard this today and think, oh, maybe how many vegetables did I eat last week or in the last 2 days?
Yeah.
And if you find you haven't eaten any, then like try eating a vegetable once a day. You know, just like little steps are really important. Just like with exercise, you know, you don't go from sitting on the couch to, you know, doing an Ironman or even doing your PD boxing class every single day. I mean, it takes time and we can't expect that from our brains or bodies. So give yourself a little bit of grace and go slowly, go forward confidently, and don't get down on yourself if you eat the birthday cake, you know? I think, you know, the food thing, it's not all or nothing, right? It's not black or white. We're not eating healthy or eating unhealthy. There's a gray area, and it's important to acknowledge that and say, you know what, I am, like, the holidays are coming up, like if you love pumpkin pie or you love whatever other kind of pie or whatever it is, it's okay to eat that, you know, one day out of the year. And it doesn't mean that like the next day you need to restrict. It doesn't mean anything like that. You just need to move forward, you know. I work one-on-one with people so that you can get in contact with me through my website, Medicine of Yum. I kind of do work with Parkinson's patients and work with how they can actually implement some of these things. There are a lot of barriers, but so there are some good resources out there. I'm hoping that in the future we see this field kind of expand because I think it's hopeful and helpful.
Well, Dr. Prasant, I can't thank you enough for being part of the series and really marrying your neurology background with this specific area of nutrition. It's really exciting to see you kind of take, you know, the lead and help people utilize this, you know, almost medicine, if you will, to give them another controllable in their world. So it's exciting. And thank you for kind of putting these two things together and starting a conversation.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me, and love empowering people. So keep going out there. I know it's a hard road.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you.